everyone. Good morning and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter. This is Nick Wright. Good weekend, guys. Good football weekends.
Great weekend. Enjoyed listening to you on the call that game, man. Did a great job. It was fun.
Ooh,
listening
tired.
To you on that call makes me feel like I need to respond. So you flip around and I got to you and you would talk and I felt like saying, we'll take a break. We'll be right back. After everything you said. But then I got used to it and it was fun.
Oh, I missed you this weekend, Jenna Wolf. I missed you so much.
Oh, God. Okay, we got a great Monday show for you today. Drew Brees is now officially concerned.
Some things change, some things stay the same.
About the hand injury that forced him out of the game. Ezekiel Elliott thinks Dak is, quote, one of the best quarterbacks in the league right now, and Julio Jones earned every last penny of that new contract he just got last night, and that's where we're going to start. Little Sunday night football. Eagles taking on the Falcons. We jump right to the fourth quarter. Philly down 4. Carson Wentz gets off the improbable throw to Mac Collins. Later in the drive, Wentz with the QB sneak for the rushing touchdown. 2-point conversion good. Philly takes the 3-point lead. Falcons do not go away. It's a 4th and 3. Matt Ryan to Julio Jones. And Julio off to the races. 54 yards in for the touchdown to take the lead. Eagles, one last chance on 4th down. Wentz to Zach Ertz. But Ertz is stopped just shy of the first down. And the Falcons go on to take the win 24-20. Both teams now move to 1-1 on the season. All right, Chris Carter, let's start big and end up small. First, how did the Falcons pull off this one?
Well, the Eagles made too many mistakes. This game reminded me of one of the games that they played last year, beginning of the season, week 1, where the Falcons lost a lot of players. Ultimately ended up changing their destination during the regular season. But when you lose the type of, especially the wide receivers, Alshon's got a calf, DeSean Jackson, he's got a groin. Those guys not being in the lineups, even though their backups were able to make some plays there at the end, when you don't have your frontline guys, that last drive, you're going down the field, Nelson Aguilar, Ertz are the only two premier receivers that you have, of your regular receivers that you have on the field. You could see in all the mistakes that Philadelphia made earlier in the game, they couldn't recover from them. And then at the end, you talked about Julio Jones. After a very mediocre 7.5 quarters of playing football after signing the record deal, averaging $22 million a year for a wide receiver, he comes up with the big play. They make a great call. They have a what you call a jailbreak screen, which is a blitz beater. They had an all-out blitz, zero coverage. And this is one of the things that you do. If you're not going to bump Julio Jones and you have an all-out blitz, they have more people coming than what you can block. Matty Ice makes a great audible, gets him into the jailbreak screen, and Julio finishes the deal. It's basically him in a foot race against one of the safeties, and he's going to win that often. So the Falcons were able to, you don't want this week to be answering questions of, man, you guys start 0-2 after changing their defensive coordinator, changing their offensive coordinator, changing their special teams coordinator. This team is very, very fortunate after playing bad in week 1 in Minnesota and being dominated to be able to squeak out this win at the end in their home opener, Nick.
This was almost a great win for Philadelphia in this regard. Atlanta thoroughly outplayed Philly throughout this game, but Matt Ryan made some uncharacteristic mistakes and repeated mistakes, including an interception in the end zone on 1st down on a pass he simply does not need to make.
Yeah, I would say, though, his arm got tipped. If you look at the highlight
sure.
of that, I mean, it took something off the throw. And if you watch the ball, when the ball comes out of his hand, he didn't have a natural follow-through. It was like his hand opened up when someone hit the bottom of his arm.
On that one in particular, absolutely.
Yes. This
was a game that Atlanta clearly didn't trust their rushing attack. And because of that, even with a lead, they were throwing it repeatedly. And Matt Ryan kept Philly in the game. And when you saw Carson Wentz, you saw the play he completed on that second to last drive that they had to keep it alive and then dives for a touchdown. It's like, wow. For Philadelphia, these are the types of games that Super Bowl contenders find a way to steal. And then that 4th down play, which I didn't know was an audible, but that was a brilliant play call in the moment. Jake Matthews comes out and just annihilates Maddox, the corner. And then nobody's catching Julio Jones. You mentioned before the show he got up to 20 miles per hour on this run. And that means he wasn't at top speed for him if it were earlier in the game, because he can go faster than 20 miles per hour. And then late in the game, or after this, Philly has another chance. They come up just short. But to me, the takeaway from Philly will be the atrophy of injuries, and Carson Wentz got the hell beat out of him in this football game repeatedly. He made plays despite it, but Philadelphia comes away with this game with more damage than just one loss. They come away with Wentz banged up. We don't know how many receivers they're going to have available next week. We talked about the depth of this team, Jenna, but this was a lot of damage for just one football
game. So that right there is what I want to get to. The reason I picked the Eagles to go to the Super Bowl is because of the depth, because they seem like they're the one team that can overcome, you know, injuries week after week and still put a team out there. Last night, was it a case of they were just too riddled with injuries, or did they just not have an answer for the
Well, you asked me what happened. If you don't go over the injuries, then you're missing a key part to the game. DeSean Jackson has 2 50-yard touchdowns in week number one. Well, where was he? He was hurt. Well, Alshon Jeffries, well, where was he in the game? Look right at the stat sheet. Well, where was he? Well, he was hurt. It's not an excuse. It's just an explanation of what's going to happen. They did have competent guys fill in, but they had made too many mistakes to overcome. If they don't have the depth, for which you talked about and the reason why you picked them, they're not in this game. So, yes, they do have depth. They do have depth at three different groups. The wide receivers, they got a lot of depth. All right? The offensive line, they got a lot of depth, but their frontline guys aren't playing great. And their defensive front, they have a lot of depth. So, don't let one loss in Atlanta against a team that has to pull out that jailbreak screen to be able to win that game.
Right.
I wouldn't overreact to that. The depth is still there. And for Philadelphia, if you want some silver lining, these aren't season-ending injuries. If you go around the National Football League yesterday, if you thought week number one was bad, week number two was even worse. And to me, it speaks to the lack of preseason, the lack of conditioning, and then also being there talking to players. They can sense Larry Fitzgerald, Earl Thomas, guys saying, no, we're not in game shape early, so we're going to see some significant injuries in the first month of the season.
Okay, Eagles and Falcons now both 1-1 on this season. Which of these two teams, Nick, do you trust most moving forward?
Philadelphia with one small asterisk. To me, Philadelphia is better than Atlanta for the length of the season. Philadelphia does have more depth. I think Philadelphia has more different ways to beat you. Despite not playing well yesterday, it did take a 4th-and-3 for them to lose, and then even then, they were in position to potentially take the lead if Zach Ertz goes 1 yard deeper on his route. But they've got to find a way to protect Carson Wentz better. Carson Wentz was getting hit repeatedly. If you watch just a longer highlight package of last night, so many of those plays are broken plays where he is getting contacted and then finding a way to escape. Wentz, he got left the game briefly and McCown came in because we have his ribs checked out. I think Philadelphia is better, but if Carson Wentz got hurt again yesterday, even though it was only briefly, and it wasn't his fault. I mean, he was not being protected throughout. So I have a concern even greater now than I did before about Wentz's health. But in totality, I trust Philadelphia more.
The way you protect Carson Wentz is you got to be able to run the ball. Even though they had 21 rush attempts, none of the running backs, 3 of them touched the ball, averaged more than 3 yards a touch. If your longest run is 5 yards, your quarterback's going to get brutalized. And that's what we saw in last night's game. So nice remedy, because there's only 2 ways. You can either run the ball or you can go max protection. You're not going to go max protection because your tight end might be your best receiver. So their only remedy would be able to run the ball to create some balance. Doug Peterson can't fall in. They weren't way behind in this game. You have to have some balance in the NFL. And if not, they're going to tee off on your offensive line and the Philly line. It might be ranked by Pro Football Focus as the best line, but right now they're not playing up to that level.
All right, Eagles weren't the only team with injuries last night. Coming up, could Drew Brees' hand injury derail the Saints' season? That's next on FS1. You can always check us out on the Fox Sports Channel. That's on SiriusXM. We'll be right back. Are you ready for what's ahead? You can't always predict the future, but you can game plan for it. Generations of families and businesses have harnessed the power of Pacific to help them reach their unique goals. Whether you need to save money to meet your needs, ensure your family is protected, or make sure you don't run out of money, Pacific Life has a variety of financial solutions that can help. Pacific Life counts more than half of the 100 largest U.S. companies as its clients and has been named one of the 2019 World's Most Ethical Companies by the Ethisphere Institute. Protecting what matters most to people for 150 years and counting, that's the power of Pacific. Ask a financial professional about how Pacific Life can help you game plan for your future. Or visit www.pacificlife.com. Back here, first things first, we'll get to Drew Brees' hand injury in a second. But first, a couple of highlights from yesterday. Lions, Chargers, Mike Williams laying out for the 47-yard catch.
Oh, this is a great catch here because the safety could have hit him on this one. He definitely thought he was going to get contacted and air on that one. Great catch by Mike Williams, trying to make a comeback after having a disappointing rookie season, and the Chargers need him. Good connection for Phillip Rivers down that sideline.
Chargers had a highlight in the first quarter, that highlight, and that was about it.
Rams, Saints, Cooper Kupp. This was my play of the weekend right here. Catches it over the middle, the stiff-arming the defender, breaking a bunch of tackles, getting stopped at the one-yard line. But what an effort by Cooper Kupp.
It was a sensational play by him. You see the refs put his hands up. It was called a touchdown, but then overturned, put back at the one. I mean, an absolutely great play by a guy that was really missed last year once he went out with injury.
All right, Alabama, South Carolina. Najee Harris catches the pass, shoves one defender out of the way, hurdles another, then breaks the last tackle. That's a touchdown.
People wonder what five-star recruits, what do? And this kid's been sitting the bench for a couple years, sitting behind a bunch of other five-star recruits. That's what they do. Throw a big defender from South Carolina down, hurdle over another safety, and then avoid the linebackers he gets into the end zone. I thought this was the best play of the weekend.
On fourth down, no less. Just go ahead, go do that to him. But you're right. He was a top 30 player in the nation coming out of high school. He's had to wait his turn at Alabama.
Finally, uh-oh. Mississippi State, Kansas State, okay. Freshman quarterback Garrett Schrader. Spinning, ooh, like the helicopter. Attempts to gain the first down there.
Now, this is clearly the dumbest play of maybe I've seen in a long time. And I like the fact when you do something dumb, the defense knocked his butt up in the air. Don't knock him down into the dirt. Knock him up into the air. I was shocked when I saw
it. I mean, it's fourth down. He was trying to essentially hurdle 7 yards in the air.
He wasn't hurdling. He was diving.
Or diving 7 yards in the air.
I mean, why would you dive that way? Like, why would you? Listen, you have to give up, son. This is about
making
your college education. You're a freshman. You got a lot more football left in you.
Oh, no.
Man. All right. So there's Saints-Rams game now where the Drew Brees hand quickly became the big story. Brees had to leave the game after his throwing hand was hit by Aaron Donald. Didn't look like a big hit, but it took a big toll. Brees saying afterwards, yeah, I am concerned, hoping it's not too significant. The Saints quarterback will be seeing a hand specialist in Los Angeles later today. Saints lost the game and perhaps their quarterback in the process. CeCe, how devastating could this be for the Saints?
Well, the Saints are in a little bit better position than most teams. I said before the season, I thought there were two backup quarterbacks in the league that ultimately will be starters. Jacoby Brissett with the Colts. Unfortunately, Andrew Luck calls it quits before his 30th birthday. Jacoby Brissett, they thought that too because they give him the big contract to tear up his old deal, give him the big contract that he would be making starting quarterback money. And the other one would be Teddy Bridgewater. Now, I do believe that Jacoby Brissett has a lot better arm than Teddy Bridgewater has, but the overall offense and how they run their offense, and Teddy's been there now for more than a year with Sean Payton. I got a lot of confidence in Sean Payton. And then also, out of the 60, 65 plays the offense is going to run, Teddy can be removed of some of that burden by Taysom Hill, the quarterback, the utility, the Swiss Army knife, special teams guy, fullback, slot guy, a guy they use out of the backfield, a guy they use in the Wildcat formation. So they're in a unique situation there in New Orleans. They're not like most teams, if they lose their quarterback, their season's over with. So I believe that Teddy, because Drew Brees doesn't have a great arm, he just has anticipation, timing, and he's been with Sean Payton for so long. Teddy doesn't have that big arm, but he does have the anticipation. The offense will suffer some. Drew Brees is one of the greatest that we've ever seen. But with Sean Payton, I have a little more confidence than I would going around the National Football League if any of the other starting quarterbacks are hurt.
I hope you're right about Teddy Bridgewater because I've been with you on that corner, that he is one of the best backups in the league. He got paid like he was one of the backups that would one day be a starter. My concern for Teddy is the last time he's looked like a starting quarterback in this league was 2015 which is the last time he was a starting quarterback in this league. Obviously, in 2016, he suffered a horrific, gruesome knee injury where they thought he might lose his leg. 2017, he plays one series of football. We saw it at the very end of the year with the magical Minnesota Vikings year. He got in briefly last season, didn't play well. Got in briefly yesterday, didn't play well. And when it's been that long since you've had success, it does concern me that even though his trajectory year one, year two in the NFL was, oh, he's going to at the very least be a middle of the pack, if not above average starter, is that who he still can be? Because the Saints have, and you brought this up before the show, Jenna, almost no real experience playing without Drew Brees since he got there. Since he got there, he's missed four games. Two of those were end of season. We have the one seed locked up. We don't need to play you. So he's only missed two games due to injury. Sean Payton coaching the Saints, almost no experience really without Drew Brees. Brees has more experience playing without Payton because the year Payton was suspended. And so how much will the lack of a true number two receiver, which the Saints were worried about last year, which was a concern for them going into this year, how much will that hurt them now that they have a far inferior quarterback? Because even if Teddy is one of the best backups in the league, Drew Brees is one of the best players in the league. And so for the Saints, who had hopes of returning to the Super Bowl, or getting back to a Super Bowl for the first time in years, of getting vindication for what they felt was stolen from them last year, this is an enormous blow, and potentially the biggest story of the season thus far is Drew Brees on a team as good as the Saints being out for potentially multiple weeks. We don't know, but they seemed pessimistic about Brees's upcoming availability, to say the very least.
Well, the Saints didn't win the game. They lost to the Rams. A little deja vu for them in the process. So once again, they were on the wrong side of a missed call. Jared Goff appears to fumble, leading to a Cam Jordan scoop and score on an 89-yard fumble return. But the refs blow the play dead, call an incompletion. You heard the whistle. The play is reviewed and ruled a fumble. But since the whistle was blown, the Saints gained possession at the spot of the recovery, negating the go-ahead touchdown. Needless to say, Cam Jordan was not happy.
I mean, I didn't even hear the whistle. I grabbed the ball 15, 20 yards down, and allegedly a whistle was blown. Clearly, I mean, a whistle was blown. Where normally you let the play happen, any referee usually tells you you let the play happen, and then you go back and review the play.
Nick, what is it with this Saints team? Why do they seem to end up in the same position?
Well, I mean, that's just bad luck, and the fact that it was against the Rams is going to make extra salt in the wound.
Sure is.
After what happened in the NFC Championship game, after how much they talked about what happened in the NFC Championship game, the league changed the rules because of it. But to me, obviously, the stakes are not nearly the same. But this is almost worse than, as from a refereeing perspective, than what happened in the NFC Championship game, because it's preventable. That we hear the retired refs who are on TV all the time say, given the fact that you now have review, ever since review's been implemented, they are coached, they are taught, err on the side of letting the play go on because we can fix it after the fact. What is not fixable is if you blow the play dead and then all of a sudden a touchdown's taken off the board. And the other reason this one is particularly egregious is I don't know anyone watching that game that didn't think this was a fumble. And if you were watching it with no sound on, you thought without question, that's a fumble, a scoop, and by the way, a much faster than anticipated Cam Jordan streaking down the sideline for a touchdown. And it gets overshadowed because of Drew Brees' injury and because they ended up losing by 18 points. But this is a really, really bad mistake by the refs, and it's a preventable one if you let the play go as they say they are taught to do.
Well, I disagree with you as far as it's preventable. And the reason why is because when you're on the game, when you're in the game, the referee is watching the action. And if he thinks it's an incompleted pass, why wouldn't he blow his whistle? And a lot of times if you don't blow your whistle in little plays like that, guys get hurt. So they blow the whistle to make sure guys stop going. You also have to realize there's typically 60,000 to 80,000 people there. So the guys don't hear the whistle and everything. But the referee's training, you can't stop the instincts of the referee so that he can think, oh, I have replay. Oh, there's no need for me to blow the whistle when it's a natural reaction for him if he thinks it's an incomplete pass to blow the whistle dead, to make sure no one's going for the loose ball, to make sure no one gets hurt. So, yeah, obviously after I watched the replay, yes, of course it was a fumble. But we've had this play in the NFL for a long time. Inadvertent whistle, all the time. It stops it. All the players know that. If this doesn't happen to the Saints, we're probably not reviewing it the way we are. If they don't have the play last year against the Rams, it doesn't have necessarily the attention. But we have seen this, an inadvertent whistle, an open hand. We've seen this. This was like Tom Brady with the tuck rule. So it's not the first time that we've seen this play. It's just unfortunately for the Saints and the opposition happened to be the same two teams.
So did this Saints team lose the game yesterday because of getting outplayed by the Rams or because of the whistles and because Drew Brees was out?
I mean, how about all the above? I mean, we don't know. It's certainly, now that we know how the game ended, it looks like, okay, even if the Saints get that touchdown, they probably lose. But we don't know that. That is the single biggest play you can have in football as far as adding to your chances of winning are a defensive or a special team score. This was a defensive score when Drew Brees was already knocked out of the game. So instead of having it be 10-3, you're kicking off, you're now asking Teddy Bridgewater, pressed into action mid-game, to drive the field 87 yards, which he obviously was unable to do. And the reason, Chris, that I thought this was different than most, we thought it was incomplete, but it's a fumble, is because it wasn't an instantaneous whistle. It was Cam Jordan had picked up the ball and was already running by the time they blew their whistle. So if
I think one of the other refs overruled him and said that he blew his whistle. The first whistle we thought we heard was the one late. But obviously when they came together, someone must have blown it dead. If not, they wouldn't have been able to rule it.
We all heard the whistle late. And once that happens, the best thing that can happen for the Saints is the ball where they got it. They can't say, okay, you get it 30 yards upfield.
Absolutely.
And so sometimes you see a pass and it's a lateral, but it looks like it was forward. They instantly blow the whistle and you look on replay, damn. Like, that's a big play. This one, to me, was officiating-wise worse than that. That's a Super Bowl official, by the way. It's not that it's a bad official. It's that that was a really, really tough spot. And to your point, it being Saints-Rams going against the Saints, it feels extra bad for people watching the game.
Yeah, but the Rams, they lost their star on the defense. He wasn't able to be there. Aaron Donald, he was gone most of the game. Drew Brees only played two series. So I'm just going to give you a couple stats. Alvin Kamara, he has 13 carries, 3.5 yards, 45 yards rushing. You think the Saints are going to win a game he has the longest carry is 12 yards? No. Michael Thomas, he has 10 catches, 89 yards. You think they're going to win a game where he has 89 yards? No. So we can blame it on the fumble, but they didn't generate any offense after that. Drew Brees was gone most of the game. Teddy Bridgewater struggled. The offense struggled. Yes, that was a big missed call, but the Rams played totality better than the Saints did and deserved to win the game.
More than one opportunity to win it after that call. It's the 100th year of the NFL. How excited are you for this season? NFL players have been coached. Blue light from smart devices can affect your sleep. Wear blue blocker glasses in the evening for improved sleep. Sleep Number beds allow you to adjust on each side to your ideal firmness, comfort, and support. The Sleep Number 360 smart bed senses your movements and automatically adjusts to keep you sleeping comfortably through the night. With Sleep IQ technology inside the bed, it tracks how you're sleeping so you can know every morning how well you've slept that night and gain insights for your best sleep. Experience the smart, effortless comfort of the Sleep Number 360 smart bed. Find your competitive edge with proven quality sleep from $999. Sleep Number is the official sleep and wellness partner of the NFL. You'll only find Sleep Number at one of their 575 Sleep Number stores nationwide. Find the one nearest you at sleepnumber.com/cadence. Back here, first things first, joined by head coach Eric Mangini, former head coach. You can always be a head coach.
Good to see you, coach. How are you?
Nice to see you.
It's good to be here.
Got a lot to talk about today.
We do.
Start with the New England Patriots. They traveled to Miami to take on a JV team known as the Dolphins. Antonio Brown making his Patriots debut. Didn't take long to start clicking with Tom Brady. AB finished with a team-high 4 catches, a team-high 56 yards, and a team-friendly touchdown. Patriots embarrassing the Dolphins 43-0 to improve to 2-0. Here's Josh Gordon on his newest teammate, AB.
He's got a great football mind, football IQ. Guys that are football smart just pick it up. you know, some faster than others. He's one of those guys that's gifted in that area. He can come in here and was able to adapt on the fly, and he's still learning, as we all are. But, you know, it just goes to show how much he really wants to be a part of this offense, how much he really wants to be here and contribute, and how fast he did it. It was great to see him make that progress.
Coach, you knew Antonio Brown wasn't going to get the full load in that offense week one, but what were your first impressions of what you saw yesterday?
Well, they gave him a nice little package that was very easy to execute.
Yep.
Ran a speed out against off coverage. He ran a hitch against off coverage. He ran an inside fade against press man. They're all reasonable routes.
Yep.
And they're all routes that he's going to win on a consistent basis. The inside fade, I know there's some discussion as to whether it's pass interference or not, but those types of plays that he can make in press coverage, it dramatically changes this offense. If Josh Gordon and Antonio Brown can stay with the Patriots and part of this offense, they're going to be really, really difficult to beat by anybody, because now you put Edelman inside, you've got the backs coming out of the backfield.
Now you sound like me, Coach.
I told
Nick they can wrap up the AFC.
They
can forget that. They're going to be 14-2 at worst, Coach.
They have not had firepower like that with Josh Gordon and Antonio Brown on the outside. I can't think of a time where they've had talent like that available on the perimeter. And then all the things that they can do inside with the backs and Edelman, where do you want to push the coverage? Who do you want to take away? And it's really going to be a function of, can this last? Can Josh stay a part of the program and stay consistent and overcome his challenges? And where does this saga play out? But the fact that they were able to get him in, get him involved, give him some production.
Keep him out of the headlines.
Well, that's probably the least surprising part of it. You go to New England, you're out of the headlines. Like, you get that there's nothing beneficial about bringing extra attention and distractions and all the other
stuff. Up to and including breaking the league rules. Because he was supposed to be available after the game and wasn't, but they've decided,
they got a little rotation now. They're going to do Josh Gordon, throw him out there at you. Antonio's off. Then the next week, they're going to Josh will be off, and then Antonio was
right. Well, Antonio has not spoken at all since he's been with the team, but as an added bonus.
In the grand scheme of things, though,
who cares?
Not doing that interview versus anything that could have come doing the interview, it was
It's a calculated decision that they say whatever the fine is, we'll take it. It's worth it. Listen, as an added bonus, the last time the Patriots allowed a touchdown was in the AFC Championship game. So that helps, too. They've outscored their opponents from the Super Bowl, first 2 weeks of the year, 89-6. This year, it's 76-3. So the defense is playing as well as it ever has under Coach Belichick from when you were there to now. And the offense, your point on the firepower, is elite. I want to set Josh Gordon aside for a moment. On Antonio, because you and I texted very briefly right when it happened, because when Antonio was sabotaging his way out of Oakland, everyone was down on him, down on the you guys had a great line about you win with character, not characters. And he goes to New England. I'm curious if you think it will last, if you think he will do what he needs to do to be on this team at the end of the year, and they have that firepower that you're talking about.
Everybody who walks through that door makes a decision. You're not dressing the situation up. You make a decision. Do you want to be part of this program? And if you want to be part of this program, you need to act a certain way, and you need to commit to the things that they do. And then the locker room is built with guys that have a long history in the program, and you've got the greatest player that's ever played, who is coachable, who is an extreme supporter of what's being done.
Not complaining. When they go out in the cold, Tom Brady's not complaining. When it's talking about money around the locker room, Tom Brady's not complaining. When the team runs, New England runs more than anyone in the NFL. They're the best conditioned team. They run in the offseason, they run in training camp, and they run during the season. And those coach is right. Every single day, you have to sign up for this is how we're going to do things. They got the shortest lunch break of any team, and they work harder. It is football from the time you step in until the time you go home. Now, can he be consistent? Because New England will be consistent. If he continues to learn, if he continues to do all the right things, they will get him in the offense, and he will look great. He'll have great support, because the one thing about New England It's their offensive line. And having the wide receivers with Josh and having AB, it's going to help cover up for the weakness that they have with that unit, with the number of injuries that they suffered. But this will work. AB, last week, decided to do things the right way. This week, he's going to have the same opportunity. No one's going to be patting him on the back. Hey, good game, buddy. Oh, you know something this week? Take a couple sessions off. No, he's going to have to do the same thing over and over and over again. And that is really the New England way, the consistency from a day-to-day basis, Coach.
And you also get the all-hands-on-deck approach. He shows up, and Tom Brady's tutoring. Tom Brady's helping him. Julian Edelman's helping him. Everybody's trying to make him successful. And you feel that when you're there. The goal is just to win. And if I need to help you, if I need to spend extra time with you, then I'm happy to do that because I want you to be productive. I want you to be part of this. You hear so much about AB's work ethic. Let's see how good his work ethic is because there's a bunch of dudes in that locker room
it's
with
different
tremendous
working,
work ethic.
It's different when you're working on your own. You got a trainer that you've hired and everything, and you're working with him compared to someone telling you, this is your schedule, this is your life, this is what we're going to do. It's a different mentality.
And there's the mentality with the players that I'm sure has carried over that was there, you know, once we started establishing the culture of, hey, I got here at 5:30 this morning and lifted and hydrated. What time did you get here? I studied this. What did you do?
So there's peer pressure in a good form.
It's a positive peer pressure, and there isn't an acceptance of you taking away from the group goal.
That despite the fact that Antonio Brown is used to being the star on a team, and we know there are no stars really when it comes to the Patriots, but yesterday Tom Brady spread the ball around. No one had more than 60 yards. Is he going to be okay moving through the season when he's not going to have all the receptions and all the yardage that he's used to and that he wants?
Well, we've never seen him in that environment since he's been a star. He was in that environment his first year and a half in Pittsburgh, and really since then, he's been a guy who he had that really bizarre NFL record streak of 5 catches, 50 yards for over, like, I think it was 3 seasons consecutively. It meant a lot to him. The Steelers famously won game, almost risked a win to keep that streak alive. Antonio's going to have to be a drastically different person in a million different ways for this to work. Maybe he can do it. I'm still skeptical that he all of a sudden is going to go through a transformation by walking through that door.
Yep, I saw it with Randy Moss. I told you guys, he's going to do it. They're going to be okay. And the reason why also Tom Brady's buying into anyone Bill signs, but he's a combination of his two favorite receivers outside of Gronk. He loved Gronk. We know he liked throwing to Gronk, especially down the middle and down the seams. But Deion Branch, let's not forget him. Remember how much Tom Brady liked him? That's how AB is in and out of his break. So he simulates him, and as far as a deep threat and the threat on the defense, Randy Moss. So he's a combination in New England of Deion Branch and the Randy Moss, two of the best receivers Tom's ever had.
I remember when Corey Dillon came in, and there's so much talk about Corey Dillon prior to him getting there, and he was incredible. And I was talking to Corey on the way out to practice one day about the expectation versus the reality, and he talked about how refreshing it was to not have to be the star, to not have to carry the load, to just to be able to be to focus on football. So there is something liberating about that, and guys embrace it.
I disagree with you as far as AB not being a star. Oh, he will be a star. He will get single coverage. They will utilize his skill against the defense. We will see a version of AB and be like, yeah, that's a Pro Bowl player. He'll have 90 catches. He'll have 1,200 yards. And he'll have 10 touchdowns.
And it's going to be Bill, when he looks at players like that, after you have to deal with trying to stop someone that special for so long, to get an opportunity to get him in your building, it's incredible.
Don't forget, they have that receiving core now and a run game, which we haven't even talked about yet. What are they going to be? Best we're going to the Super Bowl already?
14-2, easily. Which I agree with, actually.
We'll get to Big Ben's injury in a second. But first, Lions, Chargers, Mike Williams laying out here for a big 47-yard catch.
One of the few highlights for the Chargers yesterday. This is a loss that could haunt them throughout the year. More kicking woes for them. But Mike Williams having a good bounce.
That traveling east, man. Playing that 10 a.m. game for a West Coast team is difficult.
All right, Alabama, South Carolina. Najee Harris catching the pass. Shoves one defender out of the way. Hurdles another. And then breaks the last tackle. Watch it all play out. Boom.
This is what a 5-star running back looks like.
Where's he been, see?
Oh, on the bench, sitting behind another 4 or 5-star.
Yeah.
A guy getting ready for the NFL.
All right, finally, here
Josh
we go.
Josh Jacobs sat the bench, too.
Mississippi State,
Kansas State,
quarterback Garrett Schrader.
Great win by Kansas State, winning outright as seven-point dogs. I mean, what do you think it was, Carl Lewis, man? You can try and jump 21 feet in the air. He was 7 yards
behind
Carl
Lewis was a long jump, bro.
Yeah, I understand.
Okay. This dude was trying to go up with his head.
Trying to dive, a high jump combo.
That's one of the dumbest quarterbacks I've ever seen. Okay? That was a dumb move.
Stresses me out. On to the Seahawks and Steelers, and a tough night for Ben Roethlisberger. He had to leave the game with a right elbow injury. He would not return. Ben scheduled for his MRI later today, and there will reportedly be a decision on whether he needs surgery or not, something Big Ben obviously is hoping to avoid. See how quickly could this season get away from the Steelers?
Well, for one, let's talk about Ben. If he has a ligament damage, he's torn a ligament, and he's got to have surgery, a guy at his age, is this the end of Ben? That would be one question. So we'll get some information on that. It's hard to recover, not only from that type of ligament damage to your throwing elbow. Like, I'm very concerned. But as far as the season, with Ben being absent, where is this team going to get some leadership from? Juju Smith-Schuster, I talked about it a couple weeks. Is he their best offensive player outside of Ben? At 22 years old, I was concerned about him leading the wide receiving group. Lost his wide receiving coach a couple weeks ago. Now, how does he continue to move on? No AB there. No L Bell there. So you ain't got no leadership on that offense. Could this go south in a hurry? Absolutely. This is how your season can be derailed. All right? You have expectations coming into the season. To me, they don't have great talent. They have mediocre talent for the Pittsburgh Steelers. They don't have a defense. To me, their coaches went into press conferences, oh, we're foaming at the mouth. They didn't look like they was foaming at the mouth to me at the beginning of the game, but, you know, what do I know about football? But to me, the Pittsburgh Steelers, if we look at it now in 3 months at the end of the season, you can put the Pittsburgh Steelers as which team was one of the most disappointing. And it's going to be because of injuries, the absence of L. Bell, the absence of A.B., and them not being able to produce the type of offenses that we are used to the Pittsburgh Steelers putting out there on the field.
All right, when you talk about Ben's future, I thought our producer, Dave Ermacher, before the show brought something up that I hadn't even considered, I hadn't remembered, which is the greatest quarterback in Pittsburgh Steeler history, Terry Bradshaw, in 1982 in a playoff game, tore an elbow ligament. Played one more game the rest of his career.
Were you born?
Played one more. No, I was not.
Oh, okay. I was going to say.
Because then I forgot it happened as if he was home watching it.
I wasn't around for the Civil War, but I know who won that too. So the point is that Terry did not look like he was done until he was done. Okay? And so for Big Ben, when you are talking about a quarterback in year 16, if he does have to have season-ending surgery, that big contract he just got notwithstanding, yeah, I don't think he will then retire. But will we ever see Big Ben coming off a year where he led the NFL in passing yards as the great Big Ben ever again? You would have, the smart money would be on no, even if you're rooting for him. Now, the Steelers for this season, I was bearish on the Steelers before this. Now that you've seen their offense, even with Big Ben, first six quarters of the season, get nothing going. The touchdown they had with Big Ben in the game before he got hurt came after a defensive, should have been a defensive score, set them up on a very short field. In fact, two of their touchdowns came after a turnover set them up inside Seattle's 15-yard line. They got good pressure on Russell Wilson the first quarter and a half of that football game, and then couldn't thereafter. Seattle ran the ball well. Russell was exceptional. And then you do look at, let's say it's best case scenario for Ben. He doesn't have surgery. He's just out a few weeks. Okay, they're at San Francisco this coming week. That's an East Coast team going to the West Coast, a 2-0 San Francisco team. Then they have Cincinnati, but then it's Baltimore, Chargers before they're bye. That easily can be a 1-4, 1-5 start. And so, yeah, Pittsburgh had in a lot of trouble before their best player on their team got hurt. Now their best and most important player on the team is potentially staring at a season-ending surgery on a scary injury because it's a non-contact injury. Now, we usually associate those with your legs, but a non-contact injury to his arm, it's what you see with pitchers in baseball and your Tommy John surgery. And so, yeah, it's, everything right now is concerning for the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Mike Tomlin had to go to the well after the Patriots lost to rally his guys in that locker room and to let the world know that was just an aberration. We're actually now we're ready. We're, as you said, foaming at the mouth. How does he start to right this ship? What can he do just to try to get these guys back into this season if you are going to lose Ben Roethlisberger?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. But I'm just going to tell you, I've had enough of the press conferences. I want to see some real adjustments. You can only talk so much to me. I need to see the team, what you're doing, how you're changing defensively. Are you going to run the ball? And now they might be without James Conner also. So Mike Tomlin, man, he's one of the best in the league at that, Mike. But to me, it's about what your team does on Sundays. And the team hasn't been good, and the defense has not been good for a long time. And that's not because of injury. It's a lack of personnel. They do not have cover people. They do not have enough rush people, and they do not have a typical Pittsburgh Steeler-type linebacking core. So for me, Mike can say whatever he want to say, all right? You've had L. Bell go out of that locker room and A.B. go out of that locker room, and now Big Ben, you can't tell me no lie. Denny Green used to tell me, hey, guys, I'm going to try not to lie to you, but every once in a while, I'll try to slip a fast one on you. That's what Mike Tomlin's going to have to do. He's going to have to do some of his best coaching because this team has the least amount of talent of any team that he's coached in Pittsburgh.
Another starting quarterback after Drew Brees out after yesterday's play. Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.